And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Transfer, the offseason is officially upon us. Yes, the Canucks have been in offseason mode for a while, but we have a Stanley Cup champion, a new Stanley Cup champion. The Colorado Avalanche lived up to expectations, finally, and got over the hump. They were clearly the best team in the league all season, clearly the best team in the final, a much-deserved champion. Wow, they were good.
So good. Incredible. And yet, one of the funniest stats of the postseason, you know, I think like the stat that tells you a lot, in my view anyway, is if you look through all goalies that played at least 10 games in the postseason, Darcy Kemper finishes ahead of only Jacob Markstrom. 6 of 7 to play at least 10 games, right? Like,
wow.
Pretty ridiculous. You know, you consider 30 goalies played in the postseason. Darcy Kemper's save percentage out of 30 ranks 18th.
Well, like, we knew that, right? I mean, we knew this team's talent was going to have to overcome its goaltending. And it's not that Kemper was horrific.
No, Kemper did his part.
You know, but there was a bad goal a game in most cases. The last one, I don't know that you really blame him on that goal.
No,
it was Vasilevsky. Vasilevsky probably wants the first goal back, right? Mm-hmm. He had more than enough time to track it, and it got in short side.
So the pressure, though, that the Colorado Avs put on at the start of that second period, where it was just like icing. And it just felt like Tampa couldn't get a change and they were generating chances at will. I mean, I thought that was an impressive display of power, even though, yeah, maybe Vasilevsky would want that back.
But when you look at it, you know, I mean, Kemper did just enough. He certainly wasn't the reason, but he didn't cost him. And it just shows you like just how good Colorado is, right? I mean, like 1 through 18, when you look at how this team was constructed, and they're really a case study for Vancouver because, you know, in 16-17, they finished last in the NHL, and so much has been made about that. The core pieces were still there, right? They still had McKinnon. They still had Landeskog. You know, obviously, Cale Makar wasn't there quite yet.
No. Nope.
But they had some key pieces to that team that were there at that time. And they were able to add, they were able to make some shrewd moves, 4 key acquisitions at the deadline this year. Because yep. You don't think a cup contender, a legitimate cup contender, which they were before the deadline, would have had to make that level of a volume of moves. But they certainly went all in at that point.
I think you have to make a significant change to win a cup at the deadline at this point. And the reason is... I do, yeah, because there are players that are valued a little bit differently at the deadline that you can get. Like, it's an opportunity to buy, and I think it's key to buy in a way that extends beyond rentals, right? Like, you know, Brandon Hagel is a really good example of the Tampa Bay Lightning using a team selling at the deadline to acquire a piece that helps bolster them for the run, but also he's got 2 years left at just over $1 million. He's going to be a top six forward for them for the next 2 years. You know, Arturi Lehkonen is another really good example. He's an RFA this year. He's not going to be affordable, but he's going to be a top six forward for them. Like, he's going to be a key part of what allows them to replace at least one of Kadri and Nichushkin when those guys level up their salaries this summer. So, you know, but I think you have to buy at the deadline at this point, at this juncture, because there's a variety of pieces that you can get. You can get teams to retain at the deadline, particularly when you're talking about expirings. And just the way that the hard cap system works, it's just too hard to go into a season with 25 really good players that fit against the cap. You kind of need to get into the season, you know, manage your cap if you can. Like, if you're able to toll daily space, great. If you're not, then the ability to retain, the ability to, you know, I think rejig your lineup. Like, I think that's a must do these days. I don't think you can win a cup without making some aggressive moves at the deadline. And you know, ideally non-rental moves, but rental moves too. You look at Josh Manson, Nick Paul as good examples on both sides. You know, I do think you need to be able to change up what you're doing ahead of the deadline.
Yeah, and I certainly think that when you go through that process, you realize at the trade deadline who your team really is. And it might be good enough to get through a regular season, but it's not necessarily good enough to go on a deep playoff run. And there are specific pieces that every team seems to have when they get to that point. And does your team have that in that moment, no matter how good the regular season looks? I mean, you go back to 2011, and the Canucks, you know, start to finish were the best team in the league. But they still felt the need to, you know, go get Max Lapierre, to go get Chris Higgins, right? To fortify.
And thank goodness they did, right?
Yeah, no question, right? And, you know, you also know that you're going to need a certain level of depth to get through the playoffs. But, you know, do you have that final piece, you know, on a penalty killing unit? Do you have that grit piece to completely flesh out your third line, which isn't going to expose or get exposed during the regular season, but in a matchup role in the playoffs could get exposed? And, you know, when you see that, because we all know regular season teams are so much differently built than a playoff team.
Right.
And, you know, when you get to that time of year, you've got a really good indication of what it is. In the case of Colorado, you have a really good indication of where you failed in the playoffs earlier. And, you know, you're able to go out and get those pieces. But, you know, the point being is how fast they did it. Right. When you look at the trade they had to make, you know, early on to, you know, to be able to net the assets that they got. Right. You know, it was significant. Again, for a team that could have just stood pat and said, nope, we're not going to make any changes. You know, we've got all the core pieces. We're not going to pass on any of those core pieces. And, you know, they didn't make that mistake. They didn't fall in love with all of their own guys, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, especially in goal. And I mean, the fact is that the Darcy Kemper trade was not a good one for the Avs. They overpaid, but no one cares. No one cares today that they overpaid for a guy who was just over 900 in the playoffs, right? It doesn't matter. They won the cup. It worked. They needed to stabilize their goaltending after Grubauer left. They overpaid to do it. Who cares, right? It's an interesting sort of wrinkle here, right? Where, you know, I think we'll look back on that trade and be like, oh boy, a first and a defender, like a pretty interesting young defensive prospect in Connor Timmins for a goalie who, you know, is fine. I mean, he's like an average starter. Who cares, right? The marginal upgrade of an average starter was all the Avalanche needed. Here's some lessons. Let's do some. Do you want to do some lessons from the Avs for the Canucks? If we're talking about them as an aspirational model,
for sure. But the trade that I was going to, for example, was okay. The Matt Duchene trade, right?
Well, for sure. So let me wrap that in a lesson, and then I'll kick it back to you.
Okay.
Lesson one: you can't be afraid to trade your best players when you're not very good. Matt Duchene, Ryan O'Reilly are excellent players. And the Colorado Avalanche dealt them both, not to mention Paul Stastny. over the course of the past 4 or 5 years. And it, you know, one of those trades was great, obviously. Genius. One of those trades was terrible. But both set this team on this path. And you can't be afraid. If you're not very good, you cannot be afraid. You cannot deal from a position of fear in changing direction and trading some of your best players. What do you think?
Yeah, I 1,000% agree. And that was the point I was trying to make. Like, if you're the Canucks, you can't have 5 untouchables. You know what I mean? Like, to significantly change your team and to take the next step, you might have to, you know, scale down on that list. And so, for the sake of argument, if Thatcher Demko and Quinn Hughes are your untouchables, or you know, maybe you throw Elias Pettersson into that list, but nobody, you know, you can't have 5 untouchables on a team that's this ordinary. You know what I mean? And what can those assets net you? You can't be afraid to move on from JT Miller. You can't be afraid to trade Brock Besser. You know, you can't be afraid to trade Bo Horvat. And I'm not advocating for any of those one guys, but you have to look at it, right? And when you think of the assets that were netted for them in that Matt Duchene trade, and the Ryan O'Reilly trade may not have worked out as well, but, you know, you've talked about it so often that what does keeping Ryan O'Reilly get you? It gets you an $8 million contract.
Yep.
You know, so you move on from him, and now how can you use that asset value, not in terms of what you necessarily net, but in terms of what you can necessarily spend on, you know, and how you can methodically upgrade that way, and how you can, you know, extend a draft pick or what have you. But there's different ways to do that, and not just every asset acquired doesn't have to be part of the final solution.
No.
Right? It can be an asset to get you to the final solution.
Yeah, 100%. All right, so that's lesson one. We're in agreement. Here's lesson two. Go long on second contracts for elite players, right? Across the board, the Avalanche didn't bridge a single guy that they considered to be a high-end player, right? You think about Girard, you think about Cale Makar, you think about Nathan MacKinnon, even though he was struggling coming off of that season, right? They bought out a ton of years. They went long. That contract, MacKinnon at 6.3 is the reason, like the reasons the Avs are cup champions and built, were able to build the type of juggernaut they did. Reason number 1, 2, and 3. Nathan MacKinnon makes $6.3 million against
the Cap. It's crazy, isn't it?
At wild. But Gabriel Landeskog, too. And not just this contract that he's on now, but I mean, you know, his second deal was a whopper. He signed a 7-year second contract.
Seven per.
Yeah, seven-year deal at $5.5 million, coming off of 3 entry-level seasons. Now, granted, he'd won the Calder, but in the 2 seasons, like, he then had a 17-point season, played only 36 games during the lockout shortened year, and then he had 65 points. But you know what? I think they did it before that. So after they did it the summer after he had 17 points in 36 games, they went and signed him to a 7-year contract.
Yeah, it's $7 million per, which now looks like it.
Well, sorry, that's his current deal. That's his third contract.
Oh, sorry, you're talking about a second deal. Yeah, you're right.
Second deal was 7 years long, coming, and they extended him early, coming off a year in which he'd had a 17-point season in 36 games. Like, that's not the cup that's not the contract they win the cup with, but that goes to show you an aggressiveness of approach that paid off. That paid off for Sakic. When you have an elite player, lock him up and lock him up long term. And Rantanen, of course, also fits in with that. So as you go through the list, you know, the Avs never bridged their best players. And then you go through the list for the Canucks and they bridged Pettersson, right?
Yeah.
They bridged Besser and are going to be dealing with the consequences of that this summer. They went long on Quinn Hughes, and that's good because that contract's looking great. Right, like Quinn Hughes for less than $8 million, where we're 12 months away from pinching ourselves that's the case. They went long on Thatcher Demko, same thing. A year into that deal, everyone's talking about it as a sweetheart contract. They went long on Bo Horvat. Bo Horvat's at 5.5 next season. Yeah, it's not MacKinnon at 6.3, but it's still Bo Horvat at 5.5. Like, that's still great, still phenomenal, tremendously efficient, and yet they weren't disciplined enough to do that in every case. And as a result, you know, the Besser situation's going to get complicated and he's going to get more expensive. And if Elias Pettersson breaks out and does what I think he's capable of the next 2 years, like, oh boy, You know, that really sucks. That's really going to be too bad for this team. If you're not disciplined about going long, you limit the upside of your own best players. Like, you limit the upside that your best players can provide to your own organization. And that's a way to shorten, minimize, or never even open a Stanley Cup window.
Well, you know, and that's the case. I mean, you know, you think about Colorado and how, you know, they waited 20 years, and certainly the Vancouver fan base would be great. We could get a cup every 20 years. That'd be incredible. But, you know, when does the window open, right? And that's the thing right now. And let's stick with Colorado for a bit, because we've got some time to get
I've got one more lesson. You ready?
Yeah, please do.
You don't need a stable of 6.5 guys on your defense corps. You can win with younger, puck-moving defenders, right?
I mean, interesting.
This is a team, if he was healthy, Sam Girard would have probably played toughs for them. You know, he's listed at 5'10", and that's a generous listing. Devin Taves did play toughs for them, 6'1", under 200 pounds. Cale Makar, under 6 foot, under 190 pounds. Bowen Byram, 6 foot, under 200 pounds. Like, the four best defensemen on this team were built in a hybrid mold, built to move the puck, right? This was a team built on speed first and foremost, and nowhere was that clearer than on the back end. And what they were able to do from the back end in terms of targeting players like that. High upside players. And look, Bowen Byram, top of the draft pick. Cale Makar, top of the draft pick. Girard was a second round pick and a smart acquisition, who they pretty quickly realized wasn't going to evolve into the power play quarterback, stud offensive producer that he was drafted at. But he had tremendous two-way value. They just had to live with the fact that occasionally he's going to get overpowered at the net front because he's not the biggest guy. Well, does that sound familiar? Like, is there a certain Canucks defenseman who's very clearly better than the rest of his peers who should just be put in top minutes? I think there is. Like, I think there's a direct application there from a deployment perspective for how we should see this Canucks team play next year. I'd also go so far as to say that, you know, eventually they needed to add some heft to their back end. Well, Jack Johnson signs vet minimum contract. Josh Manson, they acquire for a third and like their fourth best prospect at the deadline. It's a rental. And obviously Eric Johnson's just been around forever. Eric Johnson's kind of, here's how I see Eric Johnson. It was a bad trade that the Avs made, but Eric Johnson hung around so long that he just like was good. You know, like he played for long enough that it no longer mattered that he was acquired in a terrible trade. And it no longer mattered that he was a first overall pick who went ahead of Jonathan Toews and basically busted. He just became like useful. And for me, the Eric Johnson comp is like, that's the best case scenario for the Canucks with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Right? Like,
yeah,
the trade was bad, but Ekman-Larsson's good. And if he can hang around long enough and be a bit player on a really, really good team, you know, you're never going to look back and love the deal, but that doesn't mean that he can't contribute to the next great Canucks team. So Eric Johnson to me is sort of a Oliver Ekman-Larsson analog. But aside from that, get fast, get smart, get skill on your back end. That's the lesson of the Avs. You can win a cup that way.
And can they continue to win more? And I say that because, yep, we know their core. Like, MacKinnon in 2 years is going to become an unrestricted free agent. They've got Rantanen and Landeskog still signed long term. Their defense, they're in pretty good shape.
You called him Landeskog.
Oh, shit, did I really?
Michael Landeskog.
Yeah, I know. Gabriel Landeskog.
You're TSN through and through, my friend.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I said that.
I love it.
Gabriel Landeskog, not Landeskog. I don't even know where that came from.
I do. It's from your TSN days.
Yeah, I guess so. My TSN days would still exist.
They'll always exist.
So Eric Johnson's got another year left on that deal, and then they can gracefully and comfortably move on from it. But, you know, Makar signed long-term. Girard signed long-term. Devin Taves, they've still got a couple of years left on him, and they're going to have to get Bowen Byram done to a second deal pretty soon here, who's a pending RFA after next season.
They should do that this summer.
They should, absolutely. But when you look
how good was he, by the way? Can we just take a sec and have some Bowen Byram appreciation? Like, we weren't even sure if this guy would play again. at various stages of the last 2 years. So severe were the concussion issues that he went through. Obviously, he played his hockey locally. With him on the ice, the Avalanche outshot the Tampa Bay Lightning 79-44 at 5-on-5. He played more 5-on-5 minutes than Taves and Makar in this series, and he played more 5-on-5 minutes than any Avalanche defender, including Victor Hedman.
And, wow.
I mean, he hit a post in overtime of game 5, but he could have had, or sorry, game 4, but he could have had like a signature moment too. It was an inch away from, and that play was beautiful, and he was a big part of it. I mean, Bowen Byram is an absolute stud. Lock him in to Team Canada for years and years to come. Brilliant stuff from the young defender, and you absolutely love to see it.
When we come back, we're going to get into just the sustainability of both these teams, Colorado and Tampa Bay. They're certainly saying in Tampa Bay they don't have to close their window quite yet. And we'll also get into potentially a pretty special day for the Canucks with the Hockey Hall of Fame announcements coming, along with rumors about some other comings and goings in Vancouver.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So as we got through the numbers here, again, knowing, Drancher, that the core is intact for Colorado, there's still some heavy lifting for them, but they've still got the room to do it given the bulk of their contracts. You know, you can debate Mikko Rantanen at 9.5 per or 9.25 per, but everything else is not onerous, right? Like, they have got room to not only keep the players they've got, but potentially upgrade in some areas.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cap space there, right? 26-ish million in cap space, depending on how you calculate, you know, like Lucas Sedlak and Alex Newhook being on the roster or not. I'd expect Newhook will be. I mean, that's a lot of space to do a lot of things. Lekkonen is an RFA. Obey Kubel played really well for them until he dropped the cup. He's a RFA. There's a ton of flexibility. They basically got their entire elite core locked up for next season. It's going to be not simple, but certainly straightforward. They're going to be able to restock their books or restock their roster without making any arduous moves that cost them future assets, right? Like, it's just going to be about, do we want to re-sign this guy or not? Okay, how do we replace him? Okay, let's do that. And they're going to have... Families love to live in Denver. Like, it's a desirable place to play. Players love to win cups. They love to have a chance at winning a cup. They're going to be very well positioned and presumably well positioned to get bargains should some pretty important players for them, whether it's Kadri, whether it's Kemper, whether it's Nichushkin, end up walking in unrestricted free agency.
Yeah, I think it might be hard for them to keep Kadri, but when you know, this is the team that...
I'd be surprised if they even try, Farhan.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Like, you've got Logan O'Connor, you've got Alex Newhook, you've got JT Compher. I'd wager heavily that they'll bring back Helm. And, you know, I mean, maybe you re-sign Nico Sturm. I mean,
Helm at 35, hey, you think they'll go there?
Why not? I mean, if it's a one-year deal, I don't see why not.
And that's the point, right? Is that, you know, you can get a player like that, a useful player like that, at a low number. You know, Tampa Bay can get Corey Perry. You can get guys like this that still have value, that have value throughout your lineup, but you can pay them like a fourth liner. Why? Because they want to play with you because they know you're a contender.
Right.
And if they're desperate for a cup before they retire, you're the place they can go to get it.
Totally. And
So there really is an inherent advantage with just being good.
Yeah, advantages accrue to the teams that are well run. Like, you want to understand why there's not that much parity, why parity is a lie, why anything can't happen. You want to understand why. It's that advantages accrue to the teams that are well managed. And like, the divide right now in the NHL isn't between teams that, you know, can spend outside the cap. Like, it's there are card counters at this table. There are card counters and there are whales. And the Avs have for a couple of years here, well, really for 5 years, like ever since the Waugh experiment failed and Joe Sakic reoriented his organization around some really sharp people, you know, they've been card counters. The Tampa Bay Lightning have been card counters for 15 years. And advantages accrue to the teams that behave in that manner, that are smarter, more efficient than everyone else. And it's up and down the organization. Like, I loved that $1.2 million that Jeff Vinnick, the Tampa Bay Lightning owner, donated by way of giving $5,000 to every full-time employee with the Tampa Bay Lightning to donate to a local charitable cause of their pick.
Yeah,
right.
Saw
and it's
that.
Like, it's like, what a team, you know. First of all, you can sniff at you can be cynical and sniff at like, what's 1.2 to a billionaire? Like, whatever. I mean, I don't have time for
1.2
that.
He doesn't have to give.
Yeah, I don't have time for looking at the world through that lens.
Yeah, me neither.
It's the cultural impact, that type of buy-in that comes from that type of gesture. You know, this is a team that won their first cup with zero playoff home dates, right? They won their second cup with restrained playoff home dates until the third round. This is the first real playoff run, and they've basically donated like a home game's worth of revenue directly out of the owner's pocket in a way that brings the team together and makes everyone feel like they were part of this. I mean, it's genius. And it's not just generous. It's also the type of thing that perpetuates an organization that just keeps nailing it. Like, every day they keep nailing it. They get it right on every little detail. And you have to in a hard capped league to win. People will talk about the tax rate or the whatever. And it's not a disadvantage by any means, but it's not the whole story. It's not even close to the whole story. People will talk about Kucherov on LTI, and it's like, the lesson of Kucherov on LTI is that this organization is the best in the league at marshaling every facet of their organization into the service of being great, of winning. And that's why they've been to 3 straight cup finals. That's why they won 11 playoff rounds in a row. That's why they took a team like Colorado that was plainly better than them to 6 games and you know, made them work for it every step of the way.
Yeah, and when you look at where they're at cap-wise in terms of significant pieces, you know, Andre Palat matters. Nick Paul matters in terms of guys that are going to be pending UFAs. You know, Riley Nash is in there, but, you know, I don't know that that's significant.
Palat's impossible. You can't lose Palat. You have to find a way, but I don't know how you find a way.
Yeah, I don't know either, because they are going to be right up against it. And then Jan Ruda, as far as the defensemen go, they've still got 6 guys that are under contract, but you don't have Jan Ruda. But, you know, Vasilevsky, 27 years of age, still signed long-term. You know, like, the core of what they're doing, if they can get something somehow worked out with Palat, like, you know, I don't know who you sacrifice to make that work. I don't know that there's much there that you can move off from. What do you think?
They're in tough. This is, you know, the thing about the Tampa Bay Lightning is, you know, they're going to figure it out. Like, they replaced a third line composed of top 6 players really effectively at both the deadline and in free agency. I mean, all things considered, like, it's not like they managed to bring in players as good as Gord, Coleman, and Barkley Gaudreau, but how could you? You can't turn around and do that well enough. But when you look at, like, Ross Colton's legitimately really good. So they had one guy who replaced internally, but Pierre-Edouard Belmar, Corey Perry were both cheap veteran signings, right? Brandon Hagel, I thought that trade was brilliant, even though it was 2 first-round picks. I thought that was exactly what they needed to you know, take a crowbar that might open up this cup window, you know, a couple years beyond. I think they're really going to be headed for some pain next summer, because next summer you've got Sergachev up, Cernak up, Anthony Cirelli up, and Ross Colton all up. Now, they're all RFAs, but that's going to be really tough with only Killorn expiring. They're going to face some tough choices with some of those players. You know, beyond that, you've got Stamkos expiring, and that helps a bit, I guess, except that you can't really live without Stamkos either. So
expiring at the right time, right? He'll be 34 when he expires.
Yeah. Well, because I actually think they bridged Stamkos, as I recall, 5-year deal. So a long bridge. They did a long bridge with Stamkos.
Which is tough to do at that age still.
Totally. Well, right? their brilliance with Stamkos was that they leaked nothing. They were comfortable letting him explore his options. They never changed their offer. They just bided their time. And once he decided that he wasn't interested in what the mayor of Toronto was selling, he re-signed. Well, literally, he met with John Torrey, right? Well, and once he re-signed, like, Victor Hedman's long-term 7.875 deal was done immediately. And they were locked into this cap structure that was highly favorable, highly advantageous. If Braden Point's healthy, I mean, this team's still really good. I think they're going to be good again next year, but their path toward being at this level is not as straightforward. I think if they're going to keep Palat, they're probably going to need to make a tough decision on one of their RFAs proactively. I don't see them doing that, so I think it's going to be hard for them to keep Palat, and then they have to replace a really important piece, like a top-line caliber player, on the cheap, and that's not easy. The Tampa Bay Lightning's route toward being in this spot again is far more arduous than the one that Colorado faces this offseason.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, let's get into the Canucks, and some great news potentially coming here as far as Daniel and Henrik Sedin are concerned, and some rumors around them about what's coming up as we head deep into the offseason.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
So let's look at the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, we debated at what point Daniel and Henrik would get into the Hall of Fame, if both were worthy candidates, if they were first ballot guys. But it certainly looks like it's going to happen, that they're going to be announced into the class of 2022. Looks good on them.
I mean, there should be no doubt, right?
Well, there were many that doubted whether individually they were as good as their collective narrative, right? And, you know, for us in Vancouver, it becomes so difficult, and it's probably easier for you to detach because you're such a numbers guy. For me, it's difficult to detach from who they are as people, and that's not what the Hall of Fame is for. That's why you retire jerseys, even though Pavel Bure got it. That's not what you do that for, right? So it is for on-ice excellence, and it looks like both players are going to go in their first year of eligibility.
And what are you basing that on?
I'm just basing it on news I've received from our people at TSN.
You think they're in? What about Lou?
I haven't seen what the future is for Lou for this year.
Interesting. Well, anyway, most of our listeners will be listening to this after the Hall of Fame class of 2022 is announced. The Twins should be there. Here's the long and the short of it. There's only one forward who ever won the Hart Trophy who's not in the Hall of Fame. Like, there's only one. And it was Tommy Anderson, who won the Hart Trophy for, you know, one of the seasons he played for the Brooklyn Americans. Whatever. He was the most valuable player in 1942. For a team that missed the playoffs during the war, like right after that season, Tommy Anderson enlisted in the Canadian Army and went to fight in Europe. That's the only guy. That's the only guy, Farhan.
Would it have been possible to put in one without the other?
No, it would be, that would be it doesn't make sense. Like, it's the same thing with the Lindsay. Like, everyone who's ever won the Lindsay is in the Hall and will be in the Hall, because if you are the best player in hockey for a season as voted by your peers, you're almost surely Hall of Fame worthy, because you don't just like show up, have one great season and never do it again. You know, like to achieve that level of greatness, it requires more. And in the Twins case, they were also extremely durable, extremely productive throughout their careers. Their career numbers would be even better, I think, if they'd gone, you know, to a situation where they were utilized more heavily earlier on. You know, the Twins like didn't play PP1 until they were like 25. Like, that's a huge, that's massive context that needs to be viewed appropriately in adjudicating their career stats. They're no doubters. They're no doubters. I think any argument against them is one that leans too heavily on career point totals and fails to account for the context of how good relative to their peers players were for a various stretch of time. Like, this comes back to my Naslund over Linden argument, right? Like, Naslund was the best offensive forward in hockey for a 4-year stretch. Like, for me, you know, that makes him the, you know, until the Twins, the greatest Canuck. Like, he, no other Canucks forward had ever hit that type of level. Well, until Henrik and Daniel did it. And when Henrik and Daniel did it over a 3 or 4 year stretch, like, they were outperforming some of the best players we've ever seen. You know, it, like, if you go from, let's say, the 09-10 season through the end of when the team was winning President's Trophies, so 11-12, right? A 3-year stretch. If you go through that stretch and sort all NHL forwards by points, like, Henrik's 1, Daniel's 5 in the NHL over that period. And that's with, you know, like, ahead of Steven Stamkos, who had, you know, 156 goals in 246 games. It's ahead of Alex Ovechkin at the absolute apex of his powers, right? Joe Thornton, like, it's incredible. Well, what these guys did.
During their career, like, for the 18-year span of their careers, Henrik is 5th in scoring and Daniel is 7th. During an 18-year stretch.
Right. And but who are, do you know who number 1, 2, and 3 are?
Go ahead.
Crosby, Ovechkin, Jumbo Joe, Jerome Iginla.
Never heard of him.
That's it. And then Marian Hossa wedged between the Twins, which actually kind of feels fitting because Marian Hossa's incredibly cerebral. And Hossa's in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
You know, like, all of these guys are Hall of Famers. Martin St. Louis is in the Hall of Fame. Like, what's the argument for St. Louis and not the Twins, other than cups?
All true. All true.
You know?
So good on them. Beyond worthy.
No doubters. There were no doubters. Anyone who was doubting it was off their rocker. That, like, people occasionally would be like, will you write why the Twins should be in the Hall of Fame? I'd get that from VIPs occasionally. And I was like, no, because I'm not going to pretend it's a conversation. You know, and by the way, if Lou doesn't go in too, that's ridiculous.
I agree.
Lou needs to go in.
Yeah,
Lou needs to go in, and if he doesn't get in on the first ballot, ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous.
I can't argue with you. And we'll have to do a segment just on Luongo's contributions to the Vancouver Canucks when we do this again next week. Let's get into some Canuck rumors. And on 32 Thoughts, I know that that Elliot and Jeff Merrick were just talking about the JT Miller situation and how, like, I don't know how you don't think this is headed to a trade. Do you see it the same way?
I don't necessarily, but I think if I was handicapping it, I think I'd be like, what release would surprise you more? JT Miller signs, you know, $60 million contract extension with Canucks, or Canucks trade JT Miller for XX and X, Y, and Z? What release would surprise you more if you saw it in your inbox tomorrow?
If 60 million was the number, that would surprise me more, because okay, I think he's going to be at least 8 times 8. So he's going to be above 64.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, so there you go.
I don't know if you were trying to frame the question as a discount contract versus just throwing out any random number in the 60s.
Yeah. So. I was 100%. So that's 7.5 million.
Right? Yeah. Like, that would shock me.
So there you go. I think that answers your question, right? Like, the problem for the Canucks is that they cannot pay everyone. Like, they can't pay everyone. They're constructed like an end of window contender. Like, the conversation we had about Tampa Bay kind of applies to the Canucks, except they've, you know, done it to themselves without achieving anything, which is the mess that Rutherford and company will try and pick up. And It's not an easy one. It's not an easy task ahead, and it's going to demand some pain, in my opinion. It's going to demand some really tough decisions. And the JT Miller one is a decision that should make this organization sick to the stomach.
Yeah, but you know, it could make them better. Like, it could be their Matt Duchene decision.
I agree. I think that's where this goes. But there's also a world where JT Miller becomes foul-mouthed Adam Oates now that he's a full-time playmaking centerman and produces a ton of offense for the next 4 or 5 years and is well worth a $7.5 or even $8 million contract, you know, well into his mid-30s. Like, that's also a realistic possibility. I agree with you. Like, I think the JT Miller logic requires the club to move on. I think if the goal is to win a Stanley Cup, that's where you have to go. But it's not a slam dunk for me, and it makes me nauseous. Like, it makes me nauseous. This team should be set up to keep their best players. They're not good enough that they should be losing their best players because you can't have a can't afford everybody. But that's the situation they find themselves in. I just find it kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is. But, you know, like, these are the decisions that have to be made, right?
Yep. They do.
Take me through, let's see, what else have we got? Brock Besser doesn't sound like it's anywhere close right now.
Yeah, it's early.
View it as early?
Yeah, these are negotiations. Like, when you're negotiating to tight deadlines, I still view it as early. Now, I think you ideally want to get the contract done before July 2nd. Because the one card you have is the team club elected arbitration card. Now, even if Besser's camp doesn't believe you'll play it, right? It's a piece of favorable leverage that the Canucks have in their favor that expires this weekend, this upcoming weekend. It's gone. And so ideally, you'd like to avail yourself of it to try and, you know, get a team-friendly settlement. I also laid out, at The Athletic, we have a piece up today. What does a perfect offseason look like for the Canucks? And our take on Miller, for example, was, you know, not trade him necessarily, but be proactive. It's either a team-friendly extension or it's a trade. You have to make that decision this summer. You have to make it ideally before the market opens on the 13th. Like that, be proactive. And be proactive on Horvat, too. The same logic applies to Horvat. Team-friendly extension. Or you gotta move on. You gotta monetize. That's our view of both players, both circumstances.
But you don't think there's less stress in Bo Horvat? Like, he may not carry the same cachet. There may be more loyalty there. You may be able to take a little more time in that one. Or do you think it's got to be done in the same timelines because they both have the same amount of, you know, years and are in the same status at the end of it all?
I mean, you can grind away a bit, but you have to have a really good sense that it's going to get done, and it's going to get done at a number you're comfortable with. You know, like, you don't have to have it done on the 13th. It doesn't have to be announced the day the market opens. But I think you have to have a good sense of where it's going.
And before
there has to be progress, and there must be, because we've heard nothing about it. You know, like, yeah, it's such a quiet one. There's been no conversation, no chatter, no trade speculation, nothing around this guy. Well, that tells me that something's up, because this market never stops chattering.
So true.
Like, that's like,
and you're leading the chatter, and you haven't started any between you and Dhaliwal. Quickly before,
sorry, let me come back. Let me come back to Besser really quick. I laid this out at The Athletic, because the one advantage that the Canucks have is you pay your way out of the Besser mess that this new management group has inherited. The structure of the deal that I've suggested in that piece is $8 million for Besser for the first year. 6.5 for the year two, 5.5 for the second year. Comes in at a $6.667 million AAV, right? And you pay it all in signing bonuses. So 7.5 in the first year, 5.5 the second year, $4.5 million in signing bonuses the last year. And all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, you can accept your qualifying offer and you have no security and you'll earn that money over the next 10 months. Or you get $20 million in security and $7 million today. That's the way you force a settlement if you're the Canucks. You have to come correct. You have to use the big market status that this club can employ to their favor. That to me is like the settlement that makes the most sense. I'd love to see the Canucks get that done this week. I think all hands should be on deck with that being the goal, in my view.
A couple of small announcements. The club just announced today that they have re-signed a couple of guys, three players to two-way deals. Sheldon Dries, who had a few effective games with the big club, Guillaume nice. Brisebois, and okay. forward John Stevens. All three get two-way contracts.
Interesting. So yeah, good. Two-way contracts are good because they don't soak up your summer tagging space, right? You have to be really careful doing the one-way deals because they impact your off-season cap, which you can exceed by 10%, but you know, things can get wobbly if you're not pretty careful. You know, I don't really understand some of those. Like Guillaume Brisebois, I feel like is probably not worth the contract slot at this point, but there's parts of his game that I like. Like, I think he's a sturdy guy and by all accounts, a good human being. So perhaps the team likes him for culture reasons, and good on John Stevens for earning his second consecutive NHL contract. Guy played like 4 years in the AHL without between NHL deals. But he's grinding it out. He's become a really useful faceoff guy. He was a top line center for Abbotsford last season. Nice to see him continuing to get rewarded for being, by all accounts, a really hard worker and a guy we could even see some NHL games out of, you know, in the future. And then Dries, I actually really like Dries. Like, I think Dries can, if Dries is your 13th forward, I think you should be totally comfortable with that. I was really impressed with him toward the end of the season. I thought he was full value in that cup of coffee.
Yeah, no, I think he did some good things and certainly has proven that when he's here, he's going to belong. If in fact he shouldn't be here on a daily basis, but certainly a guy that is a good depth piece in the organization. That is it for us for this episode of the VanCast. At this point, we're not going to be back this week, depending on, you know, what news there might be before the end of the week. But getting into July after the long weekend, we're hoping to get back to two a week. We are back to two a week, and you know, we'll get into free agency, we'll get into the draft, all of that in a much more in-depth way twice a week.
And Farhan, I know I dropped the ball on Kuzmenko, but we're now into emergency podcast circumstances.
Oh yeah,
if they do anything significant, we'll be there.
I don't know that Luongo Hall of Fame necessitates an emergency pod.
Probably not, especially because we talked about it.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as
he should be in, though,
he should be in. As far as trades are concerned or anything like that, we will definitely be here to service the VIPs. So thanks for listening to the show. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Do not forget to leave a rating and a review. If you're looking for other podcast options, Ian Mendez and Haley Salvian recap the Stanley Cup final. They look ahead to a busy offseason in the NHL on Monday with the Athletic Hockey Show. And hey, you can get subscriptions right now to The Athletic for just $1 a month for 6 months when you visit theathletic.com/VanCast. We'll be back. Stay tuned.